Gar and I, as you know, as we sit here together and talk about this, we understand accountability, and we are accountable for what this team did this year. We don't run away from it. We accept it. That's on us.
Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA, your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories.
For me to be here in the NBA organization, such a historic organization, the Chicago Bulls, so it's just a dream come true for me.
Live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday.
This is going to be a process. You'll snap your fingers and it all happens at once, but that's the plan moving forward.
So kick back, relax, and get ready for the best hour of your day. Locked On Bulls starts now. Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. We're live on Dash Radio, DashRadio.com, and the Dash Radio app on the Nothing But Net channel. We're live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. I'm your host, Jordan Malley, writer of Bulls basketball in the NBA at FanRag Sports and college hoops over at SB Nation. Along with me is Matt Peck, writer of Bulls basketball in the NBA at FanRag Sports and the host of the 312 show on AM 1590 WCGO in Chicago. Follow us on social media on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls, and subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. Make sure to follow the Locked On Podcast Network on Facebook and Twitter as well. 331-979-1369 is our text and voicemail line. You've got some thoughts on the Zach LaVine contract, maybe what the Bulls are going to do with David Nwaba, their interest in Rodney Hood, or what they're going to do with the rest of free agency, or you want to talk about Summer League. Any ideas, any reaction, any questions you have for us, leave it for us at 331-979-1369. Text and voicemails are welcome, or you can always hit us up on social media at Locked On Bulls. Matt, what's going on? I know we had a little bit of an issue with our audio yesterday, but it's good. I think leaving the LaVine conversation by itself yesterday, letting everybody digest kind of the way we thought about the LaVine contract over the summer, gives us an opportunity now today to talk a little bit about the Jerry and Grant trade and then also Summer League and all the things that we've saw in Summer League so far from the Bulls.
What's up, Jordan? Bulls Nation? Yeah, we got to pour one out for Jerry and Grant. So sad. Really broken up about it. Actually not. I think it's been interesting to see, you know, even over the last 24 hours, more people with varying takes on how they feel about the LaVine thing. And I think our main point yesterday was that, like, look, you could be upset that the Bulls kind of got forced into matching something that was higher than they wanted to pay. But it's too soon to know if this contract is a mistake. It might end up being a mistake. We don't know that yet. And trying to look on the bright side and trying to think that there's potential for LaVine to turn into a player who's worth that kind of money. And we'll see how things play out. And that's just kind of where I am right now. I'm so sick of all the negativity among Bulls fans that, like, it's just hard to have conversations with people who are like, oh, this is the worst.
Yeah, I'm right there with you, man. I think having the same opinion across the board and what everybody else is already talking about, like, we get it. The numbers don't match up to what LaVine got paid. We understand that. One of the worst efficient players in the NBA, one of the worst defensive players in the NBA so far in his first three seasons. The ACL's a factor too. Like, we get all of that. What we're trying to tell you guys is, like, I think both you and I are sitting at this point saying, I'm ready to wait and see what happens with this contract. And I don't think this hamstrings the Bulls even at all about trying to sign a max player next year or even in 2020. The Bulls will still be players in that. And that's to say if they don't go out and do something stupid like overpay Rodney Hood and the Cavs decide not to match. We'll get into that in a little bit. But look, I'm in the camp of let's wait and see what LaVine can do. Like, coming off an ACL injury, and I still go back to those 25 games. Like, 25 games isn't a big sample size for me, especially when you're playing on a minutes restriction. You haven't played in over a year. Like, obviously there's going to be some rust to knock off and he's going to be inconsistent. And you look at those numbers, like, overall, the Bulls front office knew what they were getting into when they traded for him last summer. They knew that they were going to have to do this summer. And this was going to be the conversation that was had. And more than likely, they were going to have to probably spend a little bit more than they actually wanted to in order to retain LaVine. That's exactly what happened. So I'm in the camp of just ready. I'm ready to wait and see what happens with LaVine before where I absolutely kill the Bulls front office or crush LaVine in that sense. So I'm cool with waiting a season or two to, before evaluating this contract in full fledged.
Yeah, that's basically where, you know, where you and I both stand right now, is saying that last season was not really a justifiable sample size to talk about how well he fits into this Bulls system and what kind of player he can be as he continues to improve. He's still only 23 years old. So, yeah, I think that it's in everyone's best interest to just like take a deep breath on the LaVine stuff. And we'll see. We can have continue to have this conversation as the Bulls move into the 2018-19 season. And what, let's see what else they do as far as using the cap space that they still do have this season, going into next season and next season's free agency. What, you know, take it as it comes. But it is kind of just alarming, the amount of immediate reaction, people saying, God, this is a terrible, terrible mistake. It's like, dude, pump the brakes. Pump the brakes. We got plenty of other stuff to talk about. Like Jaron Grant and his great Bulls career that sadly come to an end.
Well, with that, one of the things that surprised me about this weekend, besides Zach LaVine, was exactly this trade. This might be one of the worst NBA trades as far as the players that were involved and the teams involved in recent history. Like, I look at this trade, and we're talking about the three-way deal that the Bulls were involved in this weekend. That sent Jaron Grant to the Orlando Magic. Charlotte Hornets acquired Timofey Mozgov and Bismack Biyombo, and the Bulls got Julian Stone in return. Obviously, everybody was probably like, who the hell is Julian Stone? Well, you don't really need to concern yourself with him because his contract's only guaranteed till August 1st. Assuming the Bulls will waive him, 99.9% sure that the Bulls are going to waive him. Getting Jaron Grant off the books and acquiring that, whatever it is, $2.5 million in trade exception, should the Bulls want to make a deal and take on a bad contract, I think having that in your back pocket is good. And look, Jaron Grant didn't fit on this Bulls team. And I look at some of the games that he had, and he had ample opportunity to be a guy that could serve as a backup role with the Bulls, and he just didn't perform that way for the Bulls. And to be honest with you, Matt, I'm glad he's gone. I couldn't stand watching him bring the ball up every single time, dribble it till there's about 4 seconds left on the shot clock, and then toss it to somebody to throw up a prayer. Like, time and time again, that happened a lot. He turned the ball over a ton, and maybe it's pointing to the factor that Jaron Grant's not a point guard. And I know there's been a lot of talk about Orlando Magic fans saying that maybe they shouldn't use him as a point guard, more as a shooting guard. To me, it didn't make any sense for the Bulls to keep him. They are truly 100% committed in campaign as being the backup, and they doubled down by moving him.
Yeah, and I mean, I think it tells you how the front office and how Fred and his coaching staff feel about Jaron Grant and how unexcited they were about him as they chose to keep campaign around over him. As many jokes as we've made about campaign, especially down the stretch last season, he actually looked to be like a more useful player than Jaron Grant. You mentioned his excessive dribbling habits. Obviously, that's not something that Fred Hoiberg wants to see. There could be some element of the Bulls front office really wanting campaign to work out, so that trade that they made for him a couple years ago looks less awful than it did then and still currently does, even though campaign started to show signs of life. That was still a terrible trade. Giving up Doug and Taj and a second rounder and only getting Cam in return, that's an awful, awful trade. And the Bulls might just be really hoping the campaign turns into their long-term solution as a backup point guard so that that trade looks better. And I at the same time, campaign doesn't excite me in any great deal as far as figuring out who the filler pieces on this young Bulls team is going forward. He doesn't move the needle a lot for me, if at all, but I still am totally fine with them getting rid of Jaron Grant because he did less for me than campaign did towards the tail end of last season.
I am with you on that. Real quick, before we get to Summer League and some of the other stuff going on, I just wanted to touch on the rumor about the Bulls being involved in talks about Rodney Hood. Rodney Hood being a restricted free agent, seems like this is a three-team deal. So according to Jordan Schultz, Schultz_report on Twitter, he said that's the three-team race for Rodney Hood services between the Kings, the Cavs, and the Bulls. Matt, any interest in Rodney Hood? Any interest in the Bulls using somewhere around $16 million the Bulls are going to have after qualifying offers are either accepted or denied. If they decide to waive Zipser and Kilpatrick, they'll have about $16 million left. Looking at that, what would you say as far as what's a good deal to bring Rodney Hood in? Do you like his game at all? And if the Bulls are looking at maybe signing him to a multi-year deal, what's an overpay for Rodney Hood?
I mean, I like Rodney Hood. Rodney Hood interests me as a basketball player. He had a really bizarre 17-18 season, looking like a really solid piece with that Utah team, and then getting traded to Cleveland, where he just got forgotten about by Ty Lue. I don't know. All of a sudden, especially in the Cavs playoff series, up until they finally realized, I can't remember if it was the Eastern Conference Finals or the Finals. At some point there, Ty Lue was like, oh, right, Rodney Hood's on my team. Maybe I can use him. And he all of a sudden came back and proved to people that he can be a useful player. I like him. I think he is an interesting hypothetical fit with the Bulls right now. But if you're talking about spending money on a guy who is not going to be a big game changer, if the Bulls sign Hood, he would probably make them a better team next season. Might add a couple more wins. And I don't really know if I want that. I don't know if using that space to sign a guy like that, who is not a game changer by any stretch, but would still be kicking the Bulls a little further down on the lottery list. Like, to me, that it's just kind of antithetical with what I think the Bulls should be trying to accomplish next.
That is a tall task to ask both of those guys, but we'll find out. We'll see. We got to take a short break here on Locked On Bulls. When we come back, going to touch into Summer League, all the things that we liked about Wendell Carter Jr., Chandler Hutchison so far, and Antonio Blakeney. So we'll get into all of that, maybe have a little discussion about David Nwaba, what deals could possibly be out there if he's looking to be signed and trade, if the Bulls aren't committed long term. All of that and so much more here on Locked On Bulls. Stay right with us here at Locked On Bulls. Be back in 60 seconds. Back here on Locked On Bulls, and Matt, I had to make the joke yesterday on Twitter, and for those who don't follow us on Twitter, you should go do that, at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Like us on Facebook as well, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls. So I had to make the joke yesterday because for whatever reason, there was an overreaction when Chauncey Billups had made the comparison on draft night on national TV, comparing Wendell Carter Jr. to Carlos Boozer, and I don't take, like I said in the tweet, and like I told you on yesterday's show, I don't take a whole lot from Summer League in general. I don't get too low, don't get too high on players. But the one thing that I am 100% confident in saying is that Chauncey Billups comparing Wendell Carter Jr. to Carlos Boozer might be the greatest NBA joke of all time.
It's absurd. Like, I don't know where Chauncey was pulling that comp from, but it's obviously incorrect. The relativity between those two players stops at they both played college basketball at Duke. That is literally the only similarity. I mean, when you look at Carter's game already, especially on the defensive end, and his ability as a passer, a passing big, already you're checking boxes that Boozer never had as an NBA player. That comp is just, it's pointless. It's not just pointless, it's just flat out wrong.
And I don't know if it's just because they both went to Duke, like you said, and they're both big men, and Wendell Carter Jr. has an offensive game, but like, I look at the defensive numbers too, and just what he's shown in two games, it's like, Carlos Boozer never did that throughout his career. Carlos Boozer, to his own credit, was a very good NBA player for a long time.
Yeah, that's not a lazy comp, though. That's just a comp that is made because of reasons, logic and reasons, not just a out of nowhere, hey, they both played for Duke and are both front court players, so let's say that they have similar game. No, that like the Wendell and Horford comp is actually being made a lot because people see that as his NBA potential, his NBA ceiling is being turning into a player like Al Horford, and I think for a lot of reasons that's That actually makes sense.
The one thing that got me, and for the Bulls fans that didn't stay up to watch the Summer League game on Sunday night against the Lakers, I know it was a late tip-off at 10:30. Fred Hoiberg was on the broadcast with Doris Burke. I just wanted Bulls fans to hear this because I thought it was important, and he's talking about Wendell Carter Jr. on the defensive end of the ball, so here's that real quick.
You know, that's what he does. He just, you know, to use that length, he really... You know, the art of verticality, that's something that, you know, takes time to understand. And obviously he was taught as well as anybody playing for Coach K at Duke. But he has really mastered that at a young age. And he uses that verticality, uses his wingspan, he doesn't foul. You know, one thing in studying Wendell and watching film on him, he keeps the blocks in play. You know, he doesn't throw it into the third row. He keeps it in play so he can start your break.
The reason why I bring this clip up is because Fred Hoiberg brings up an interesting point. Talks about Wendell Carter Jr.'s game and his basketball IQ is so high that he even thinks about when he goes up to block a ball. And Fred Hoiberg's talking about how he keeps the ball in play rather than throwing it into the third row. And while we've seen over the 9 blocks that Carter's had over the summer league, a couple of those have gone into the second or the third row. But for the majority of the part, he keeps the ball in play and tries to run in transition. And I think just being able to point that out specifically tells me that the IQ for Wendell Carter Jr. is way higher than anybody's giving him a credit for. And yeah, you can come at me with saying, oh, who cares about basketball IQ? That's not really a stat that you can see in the box score, blah, 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 blah. Okay, I get that. But for a 19-year-old to think the way that he does and the things that we're already seeing on top of his Duke film, I think really excite me. And I think that's something, too. It excites Fred Hoiberg. And I like the way he talks about him and the excitement that I feel like he gives off. It's sort of in the same sense that he does about Lauri Markkanen, and that was another thing too, and I won't play that clip, but listening to him talk about Lauri Markkanen, it's almost like you could see a glow in his eyes when he talks about him, and he referenced back to the New York Knicks game as well. But going back to Carter, I think that's just one thing that caught me a little bit off guard, but I liked it. I liked the fact that he was able to pick something out about Carter's game that maybe not a lot of fans were talking about, and to that being a part of the blocking game and his basketball IQ in general is awesome.
Yeah, I also thought it was pretty funny, Jordan, because it basically also tells you what exactly it is that Fred Hoiberg cares about and wants to talk about on the defensive end. Well, I really like Wendell's ability to, you know, to be a shot blocker, but specifically to block the shot, but then gain possession of it and turn around and head the other way. So basically, Fred Hoiberg's favorite part about defense is turning it into offense. But I thought that was my take on those remarks from Hoiberg, which I thought was just so hilariously fitting for a guy who is not really known for his defensive prowess as a basketball coach, but certainly a guy who loves to get out and run the floor and score a lot of points. So, but you're right. I mean, those moments have been impressive from Wendell, and I think the commentary, the glowing comments from Doris Burke. Everybody has a take on draft picks right after they happen, and as we're watching them for the first time outside of their one-and-done years or whatever it may be, in kind of the NBA setting, everybody's got takes. But when Doris Burke has a take, you listen, because there's not many people who are broadcasters, analysts, former coaches, you know, former players, whatever, who are talking heads these days who know the game of basketball as well as Doris Burke. And Bulls fans should take it as a very good sign that she is really high on this kid.
Couple other things I want to get to as far as summer league goes. Let's talk about Chandler Hutchison for a minute, because what I told Bulls fans before the draft started and all the smoke about him getting the draft commitment and all of that, we know the entire narrative that goes into that. And I said, I think Bulls fans are going to be pleasantly surprised by his game, and I've seen kind of a split on his game so far. There's been some Bulls fans that looked at his offensive game so far in the summer league and said, yeah, this kid's not going to be anything. He missed a lot of shots in summer league. Like, I get that, but I was looking more so at Chandler Hutchison's ability to pass, his ability to stretch the floor, and those two things I thought came out in bunches. I look at the no-look pass that he gave to Carter on a pick-and-roll where Carter finished it with a dunk. That that was on Saturday, and just there was a couple other little passes that Chandler Hutchison was making that I was like, that's kind of intriguing. And look, the shot's going to come, and I think maybe some of these shots that he was taking, a lot of the shots that I saw him take, especially against the Lakers, were difficult shots. He was trying to go to the basket against two or three guys and throw up a floater or run the ball. Like, those things I think he's going to be able to learn in his discipline as far as his shots go. I think it's going to come with time, but his ability just alone to stretch the floor on the offensive end, to run it down the floor, Hoiberg had mentioned that about Hutchison's game too, and I think that's going to be really important for him. Another important part for his game coming into this season is how well and how consistent can he knock down the three ball, because that's going to be the most intriguing part of it all. If he can knock down the three ball at a 35-40% clip next season, I think we're going to be talking about a guy that's going to contribute in a pretty decent role, especially early on. I like Chandler Hutchison's game, and I think despite some of the things that he did on defense in the summer league so far, and despite some of the shots that maybe are questionable, I still think that the kid can play. And his, like we talked about basketball IQ with Wendell Carter Jr., I think that same thing goes for Chandler Hutchison too. So the passing ability and the ability to stretch the floor, and you talk about it, like guys that are ball dominant, I think Chandler Hutchison doesn't need to be ball dominant in order to succeed in this league. And I looked at his defensive rebounding too. He had seven defensive rebounds against the Lakers. He had eight total in that game, and then he had five against the Cavs. So I don't know. I like what I've seen so far from Chandler Hutchison. The offensive game, I think, will come with time.
That's the one thing you just hit there at the end. Was what I was going to point out was the strong rebounding we've seen from him already. And you and I talked about that when we were talking about him before the Bulls drafted him and then after the Bulls drafted him as one of his strengths, and one that Fred Hoiberg was really excited about when he was talking about these guys on draft night. Again, just like Wendell Carter turning his blocks into offense, Fred cited Chandler Hutchison's really above average skills as a rebounder for a guy playing his position on the defensive end to then pick his head up and start the transition offense going down the court. And we've already seen some elements of that, and as you mentioned, some elements of that involve also showing some skills as a passer that maybe we didn't know were there. I think ball handling's still going to need to improve. You mentioned ideally he turns himself into a reliable three-point shooter. You like to see that big leap he made between freshman and sophomore year when he didn't take a lot of threes and was making them at only whatever it was, like 26-27%. And then as a junior and senior, he tripled his three-point attempts or whatever, I think he ended up averaging about, you know, 4.3 three-point attempts between junior and senior year, and started hitting them at around 36-37%. So if he can build on that big jump he made at Boise State, then maybe we'll talk about him being a legit 3-and-D wing whose defense right now is a work in progress. But as a 22-year-old, he's already better defensively than some of the kids that are coming in really raw.
Yeah, and I think I look at the three stats coming in from college and in his last year. First is his player efficiency rating, which was 25.9. That was the best in the Mountain West Conference. I look at his defensive rebounding percentage, which was also first in the Mountain West Conference, and that was 25.6% of the time he was on the floor. So that's fantastic for a wing that's going to be outside. You talk about maybe some question marks we have about Lauri Markkanen's consistent ability to bang bodies down low and to rebound. Having a guy on the wing position that can fly in and rebound alongside Carter, alongside Robin Lopez, I think is only good. So I point to those things too, and like, to me, you don't need Chandler Hutchison to be a guy that comes in and scores 18 to 25 points a night. Like, you just don't need that. So for me, the biggest point for you, what you just said, is his ability to stay consistent on the defensive end, his ability to knock down the three-pointer, his ability to pass, and also the rebounding game, I think, goes big too. If you've got three guys on the floor that can rebound at the clip that they were doing in college, I think we'll be all right. So I look at Chandler Hutchison's game. It's going to be a work in progress, like you said, and the NBA is a whole hell of a lot different than the Mountain West conferences. So we'll see what he can do coming off the bench. Yeah, I think the consistent clip, though, with the three-point percentage, he did double his three-point attempts, like you had said, 2.2 his junior year to 4.1, shooting about 36%. So I'd like to see that maybe stay around the same side, maybe move it up to 38-39%, depends on how many attempts he takes in his rookie year. But don't be quick to judge Chandler Hutchison the same same way I'm talking about don't get too high on Wendell Carter Jr. Don't say, you know, don't already write it off as Carter's going to be the best rookie already. Like I said, right. Don't get too high. Don't get too low on anything in summer league.
It's summer league. We all saw Lonzo Ball win summer league MVP and struggle through large stretches of his rookie year. We saw Denzel Valentine look like a goddamn hero at summer league because he was a hero. And well,
we'll always have 2016 summer league.
I just won't finish the back end of that sentence because we're still trying to be optimistic about Denzel as a role player on this team.
The only other thing that I want to point out too in this case is, remember Dougie McBuckets a couple years ago when he lit it up in summer league? Remember when Tony Snell was lighting it up in summer league? Like
Snelly Cat.
There are guys that do come in and have really nice summers and then just don't pan out. So that's why I'm saying don't get too high, don't get too low on summer league. But we can still sit here and evaluate the talent, and I think all good things from these guys. One other player before we kind of move off of summer league in general was Antonio Blakeney. I think Antonio Blakeney scoring 25 against the Cavs and then coming out, he didn't have a great night against the Lakers. And look,
yeah, he was like 2 for 15 and had 0 assists.
Yeah, and Josh Hart was just cooking the Bulls on Sunday. But to me, I think this is an opportunity for maybe Antonio Blakeney to come back on another two-way deal. If he can do that, I wouldn't mind that. But also, I think this is going to give the Bulls a decision whether or not to give him an NBA contract. And we'll see if that actually happens. And with them moving Jerry and Grant, that could be a possibility as well. You've got Ryan Arcidiacono, who we talked about briefly. I said that I have this growing inclination that the Bulls really like the things that they see out of Arcidiacono. And I don't think they're not going to give him an NBA guaranteed contract. He's still on that two-way deal for another year. But the more and more I watch the kid and more I think about what the front office likes in their players, it's hard pressed for me to say that they don't enjoy what he's been doing, even in the stretches he was playing last year, late in the last season. So I look at those guys. Hopefully they can keep Blakeney on a two-way deal and bring him back again next year and play him in spots. If not, I don't think I'd be all that mad if they tried a 1 or 2 year deal on him to bring him on as an NBA full contract and see what he can do at the next level.
You talking Blakeney?
Yes, not Arcidiacono.
Yeah. Well, look, maybe it's just the recency bias, but that game against the Lakers, Blakeney just looked like garbage. I know he was the G League Rookie of the Year and led the G League in scoring, but that's the G League. That doesn't really impress me all that much. I don't know if the Bulls are actually planning on keeping him or Arcidiacono around long term. My guess would be no. I think it's not worth it to sign him to a real contract. I don't think that should be anywhere near the top of the Bulls' priority list right now. Maybe he turns into a solid player and maybe he earns a contract somewhere, but in G League and in Summer League, you can play hero ball, where you're just going ISO and cooking guys who are bad and too bad to be in the NBA, and then you get to the NBA and that just doesn't work. So unless you are really, really, really good at playing hero ball, a la Carmelo Anthony when he was 25 or James Harden now. I mean, I don't see Blakeney being good enough to pull off that kind of basketball in an effective way for this Bulls team. So I'm not interested in the Bulls signing him to anything other than what he's on now as a two-way player.
That's fair. That's fair. I would rather, I think the best case scenario is he comes back on another 1 year deal. And I'm pretty sure, I'm not 100% on this, but I'm pretty sure Antonio Blakeney's deal was only a 1 year deal. Like Arcidiacono's deal, as far as the two way goes, was a 2 year deal. And I know you can do 1 or 2 years. So I'm curious if Antonio Blakeney gets interest from any other NBA teams. And I'm pretty confident saying he was only on a 1 year deal. So we'll have to see if the Bulls, if no other NBA team is interested, if the Bulls are willing to bring him back on another two-way deal. Because anybody else on this roster, I'm not looking at and saying, yeah, I'd be interested in taking them over Blakeney as far as the two-way deal goes. And hey, you know, you keep him in the G League, see what he does next year. And if you can bring him up in spots, if somebody gets hurt, bring him up in spots and see what he does next season. We'll see. But I think I'm with you. He's not a long-term option or anything like that. He can score the ball, but I don't think he does anything else that is too tremendous outside of that. So we'll see. It'll be interesting.
Real quick, before we get out of here, who would you rather see the Bulls sign to a an extension of the deals that they're on now, or in Blakeney's case, a new contract that's not a two-way but a real contract. Blakeney or Campaign?
Just curious. Wow. That's tough.
Tough question, right?
Oh, man. I don't know. Man, I think I would probably... It kills me to say I would even side with saying probably leaning towards Campaign. And maybe that's just because of the lack of games that I've seen him play in. He came back from an injury. I think that, too, kind of makes me worry. But also, too, the sad part about Blakeney is people forget that he had the fracture in his wrist and he had to have surgery on that. And they weren't sure if he's going to play in summer league. I think that kind of killed his Campaign last year. But I don't know. I think it's just at this point, it's kind of a draw, and we'll see what Campaign does this season. But
when I thought about that hypothetical, I was like, man, that's in a weird way, a very tough question to answer, because neither one excites you, but you're not really sure which one you'd actually rather see stick around, because you don't know which one to believe in right now.
That's a very tough question. Matt, another one before we get out of here, too, because I was intrigued when I was listening to Mark Schanowski of NBC Sports talk about some of the deals in the cap space that the Bulls do have, and talking about Nwaba and Levine's deal, referencing the cap space that the Bulls are going to have open this summer and continued this summer and also into 2019 and 2020. He brought it up in an interesting point about Bobby Portis. He said that the Bulls are very high on Bobby Portis and want to sign him to an extension. And I guess first I want to say, what do you think Bobby Portis is worth as far as an extension goes, as far as money we're talking?
Man, that's tough. I know that there have been some reports that the Bulls are talking with Bobby this summer about potential extensions. We've heard that they have, in fact, offered him an extension, which he has not yet taken. So I don't know if that means that he was insulted by it or just thought, no, I think I'm worth more than that. I'm going to just turn that down. Maybe we can keep this line of communication open. I would like to see the Bulls keep Bobby. I think he definitely has real solid potential. But as far as a number, to me, a player like Bobby would make sense for a contract that Felicio just got last summer. Something, 4 years, 32, making $8 million per. For Bobby, I think that's in the realm of reasonable. Certainly, I would much rather see Bobby on that kind of contract right now than Felicio. But that, that's obvious. That's a duh right there. I mean, nobody wants Felicio on that contract right now, not even the Bulls front office. But that's probably in the realm of what I would deem to be fair right now if they wanted to do a four-year extension. What do you think?
That's exactly what I was going to point to. And you brought up Felicio, but I even look at guys like Lou Williams. Lou Williams was an all-star last year, a borderline all-star, and he's making $8 million off the bench as sixth man of the year. So I look at that and I set that bar as far as that's obviously a really good contract, and they got extremely lucky by being able to re-sign Lou Williams for that type of money. I look at that, and Mark Schanowski said that they're probably looking around the $10 million per for Bobby Portis to re-sign him. And the one thing I will say about this, if Bulls fans are going to get all up in arms because they're going to pay a guy $8 to $10 million per season to probably come off the bench for the majority of his time at the Bulls here, I would take that deal. If the deal's on the table and you offered Portis and he said fine, multi-year deal at $10 million per, fine. Because the one thing that I will say is if you go into this season and Bobby Portis lights it up again like he did last year, you're talking probably $12, $13, $14, $15 million next year when a lot of teams are going to have money to spend. And you think about the age of Bobby Portis right now. He's, 23 years old? You look at that, and like other teams around the league are going to say, you know what, we could probably make this guy start. So if you can lock him up on a deal that is advantageous for both sides, around probably $8 to $10 million, $8 to $11 million, I would say do it, because I don't know if I want to risk the opportunity that Bobby Portis has another really good year this year, and then you're talking north of $12 million next season on a multi-year deal.
Yeah, I think that's the part where some fans would get a little uneasy about the numbers that start going above $10 million per for, as you said, a bench player. which is kind of a weird way to identify Bobby, because I think Portis has potential to be a starter in this, in the NBA at some point in his career, much like Taj Gibson finally made his way into a starting lineup after years of coming off the bench behind Boozer and then playing behind Powell and Joakim in those couple of years. I just like, because Markkanen is the focal point right now, and they play the same position, and everybody still seems kind of unconvinced about the idea of playing Bobby and Markkanen together as a 4 and a 5, and now you just added Wendell Carter Jr., a lottery pick, to add to that front court. It's kind of like, all right, well, do you really want to pay upwards of $10 million per for a bench player? If you're rebuilding for a team that's contending and says this guy is the key to our bench, you know, players, you know, Ariza or Jamal Crawford or Lou Williams or Eric Gordon, players like that who say this is our sixth guy off the bench and he is an integral part to our team and we are contending for a championship, then yeah, that makes sense. For a rebuilding team to pay a bench player 10 plus per makes less sense. And I think that's why people are kind of skittish about that idea.
I can agree with that, too. And look, I look at the cap space that the Bulls are going to have in 2019-2020. It's probably going to be around $40 million next year, right? And so if you're paying, if you have to sign Bobby to, say, a three-year deal at $30 million, and that's $10 million per, to me, like you had said, I think the value that his potential of being a starter around the league, like, we're not saying that Bobby Portis is going to be a staple for the next 10 years here in Chicago. Like, that could also be a guy that you turn around and say, hey, we've got a pretty productive player here. You could try and include him in a deal, too. It's funny when we talk about teams signing guys to long-term deals. It's like, these contracts don't mean that they can't be traded. Like, to get value as far as the market goes, and next year with all these teams having money to spend, that's where you get kind of into sticky water, and you're talking about the front office too, and that's what I want to get people back to, is like, what does the front office think? And to me, the conversations that they've had publicly and the interviews that they've done, they've always included Bobby Portis in that conversation. I was actually shocked that Fred Hoiberg had brought up Bobby Portis's name on TV the other night. You know, the Doris Burke and Mark Jones had asked about the young core and Lauri Markkanen and Zach LaVine and Chris Dunn. And while Fred Hoiberg touched on all of those guys, he went to mention even farther, saying, you know, Bobby had a really nice year last year, and I think that went underwhelmed, and people didn't really notice him scoring and doing the things that he did off the bench. So to me, I think the coaching staff too, and on top of that, the front office really like Bobby Portis. And, you know, you can get upset because you don't think Portis is worth $10 million per. I get that, but it's not more so our opinion. It's what we think the Bulls front office likes and sees there. So,
yeah, I mean, and it's not just that recent example, but that's just one of many. When it's either Fred or Paxson talking about Bobby Portis unprompted when talking about the core of this team, that's definitely not something to turn your nose up at and to ignore. That definitely means something. Especially because he is really the first guy they mention outside of those three that they got in the Butler deal. It's always those three and then Bobby Portis. And, oh, we got to talk about Bobby Portis. Because to his credit, he did have a solid bounce back year. And again, let's remember, Bobby Portis punched a teammate in the face at practice, knocked him out, sent him to the hospital, and the Bulls decided to keep Bobby and trade the guy who took the punch. So that's how much they like that guy.
Yep, I would completely agree. And look, it doesn't, I think if Bulls fans are going to get upset that maybe he does sign a deal that's multi-year deal at 10 to 12 million, and talking about the cap space and their flexibility next year, like, it doesn't completely hamstring them again, like the same way we were talking about LaVine. It doesn't completely hamstring them. And I think back even to the draft night trades and what it would have taken them to move up to 3 or 4. You know, we talked about how Paxson and Foreman both said they were like, both teams trying to move up wanted young assets that were already on the Bulls, talking about Portis, talking about Valentine. Like, those two guys, it seemed like the Bulls front office were uncommittal to try and move in order to move up for a guy in the draft. So if they're not willing to move up to try and get a guy like Jaren Jackson Jr. or Luka Doncic at 3 or 4, that can pretty much tell you what they feel like about Denzel Valentine and Bobby Portis.
Yeah, I mean, personally, if the Bulls had to include Bobby Portis in some kind of package to trade up to get Luka or maybe even Jaren Jackson Jr., although at this point with, you know, Wendell, I'm pretty optimistic about him. We'll see. But in that hypothetical, would I be okay with the Bulls sending Bobby away to get Luka? Yeah, I would. Like, I like Bobby, but I absolutely would have made that trade. But whatever the price tag was, if Bobby was included in it, the Bulls thought it was too high.
So that'll be interesting. I'm curious to see if they can get a deal done this summer with him before training camp starts. And it seemed like, just from what Mark Shinofsky was saying and what a few other national NBA guys were saying about contract extension talks, it seems like there might be a deal in place, and maybe they're talking about numbers and figures and whatever. The one thing that I think I would be nervous about is letting him play out on the team option that he has for next year, the extension that he signed before the start of last season, him in campaign. So I look at both of those things, and I don't know. I'd be worried about letting him play on that team option, because we know how history has told us with Bulls players who have bet on themselves. It's worked out in the past for the players and not so much the Bulls in general. So we'll see.
In Gar's world, they both won that situation. Remember, that was his response when they gave Butler that extension and had the press conference. Well, clearly, you know, Jimmy bet on himself and won, and Gar was like, well, we all feel like winners here because we're really pleased to see the season that Jimmy had. We believe in him. So we all win. So let's just remember that. Let's remember that hilarious spin for a second. He's like, no,
you didn't win because it costed you $50 million.
And Jimmy won, for sure.
So I look at that. One last thing. David Nwaba. Seems like interest has died down a little bit, especially because Kyle Anderson went to the Grizzlies. There was major talk about him being their backup plan and throwing a ton of cash at him, too. So that plays in the Bulls' favor, which is great. The Kings still have a lot of money, and they seem interested, but their complaint there is that they have no wings. And, like, them talking about how David Nwaba is not going to be able to play the three. They don't want to move Buddy Hield or Bogdan Bogdanovic to the three. So that doesn't make a whole lot of sense. And they were talking about the same thing about Rodney Hood. It's like, he's not a three. So they're looking to fill that wing position like the Bulls are. So I think this might play in the Bulls' favor as far as bringing back David Nwaba. And I still don't rule out the possibility that the Bulls might look to sign and trade him.
Yeah, I mean, it's weird that we haven't heard much in the last 24 to 48 hours about Nwaba after all of a sudden it seemed like over the weekend several teams we were hearing were interested. To my knowledge, he hasn't signed an offer sheet with anybody yet. I feel like we would hear about that if that happened. So I don't know which teams he's still talking to, if he's currently talking to the Bulls. But I do know from what I've heard is most recently that Nwaba and the Bulls were significantly far apart on their negotiations of what he was looking for and what they were willing to offer.
Interesting. So we'll keep an eye on that and everything else going into extension talks. And maybe if the Bulls can continue to be serious about this Rodney Hood rumor, we'll keep in tap with all of that and bring you guys all the information that we get from it as soon as we get it. That's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls. Remember, you can follow us on social media at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls_Peck on Twitter. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls, and subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. Make sure to follow Locked On Podcast Network on Facebook and Twitter as well. If you want to be a part of the conversation, hit us up at 331-979-1369. All your text messages, your voicemails, leave them all there for us. We do our weekly mailbag on Wednesdays. So if you want to be a part of the conversation, 331-979-1369 there. We're live on Dash Radio, dashradio.com, and the Dash Radio app. On the Nothing But Net channel, we're live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. Once again, that's Dash Radio Tuesdays, Thursdays, and Saturdays, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. For Matt Peck, for Jordan Malley, Bulls Nation, have a wonderful day. We'll be back tomorrow with a fresh episode. For Jordan and Matt, we are out. Deuces.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. Locked On Bulls is live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com